Good morning, everyone. It is good to be here. The sun is out. Sadly, the leaves are starting to fall, and I don't like cold weather. But it's all good. So a few days ago, I was on the internet, and normally when I'm looking at an article, you go down to the bottom, especially on your some of your news feeds like MSN or whatever. They have these little captions that take you to another article. And usually I'm intrigued by those. I click on it, and every so often it's trying to get me to buy a computer or buy a new car. Sometimes it's a real article. So this happened to be a real article. I don't know how much I believed it, but it was an article. And the caption was, "People, famous people in history that may not have really existed." And there was a whole list of people. And every time you click, you had to go to another page, and it would tell you why this person probably didn't exist. You click next and go to a whole other list of people. And each person got their own page. So I was intrigued by the names on the list. And I think there were probably at least 20 people on this list. So some of the people that were on the list were Homer. He's the guy that supposedly wrote the Iliad and all that good stuff. So, you know, I read all those books in high school and he wasn't even real. Shakespeare was on the list. He probably was, they're saying he was some pseudonym, that Shakespeare was some pseudonym for some other guy that was famous and had written some things, but they didn't want the government to know that he was making all these plays and all this, so, okay. I'm thinking John Henry was on the list. John Henry's kind of a recent guy. So anybody knows the story of John Henry? This is when they were building the railroads. They had to chisel the rock by hand with sledgehammers. And John Henry, I think he was supposedly born a slave. He was a big, brawny guy, and he could just break rocks like it was nobody's business. So they brought on this new steam engine that could break rock, and there was a big between John Henry and the steam engine. I think he was swinging two hammers and eventually beat the steam engine, but he had a heart attack. People, oh, he didn't. He wasn't real. Robin Hood was not real, according to the article. And it, every time you got a name, it gave you a reference to another person that had done some things similarly, and maybe they mixed people up and all this and that. So the idea of stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, false. Another one of those high school things. King Arthur supposedly was not real. So his legend is there was an Excalibur that was a sword stuck in a rock, and all the guys tried to pull it out, and King Arthur came and came right out. So he's the king. He supposedly wasn't real. So as I was reading through this, I said, okay, I know there's a couple of names that are probably going to show up that probably irritate me. So early in the list, King David, which you read about in this book, he's not real. And they had all these reasons why he didn't exist. There's nothing in history, blah, blah, blah. Moses did not exist, and they had all these reasons why he was not real and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so, you know, Moses and David, they were kind of mixed in with King Arthur. I'm not giving you the exact order, but I said, okay, it's got to come. It's sure to come. Jesus has to be on this list. Sure enough, last but not least, Jesus supposedly was not real by this article. And the interesting thing about it, each of these other people got almost a full page of why they didn't exist. But when they got to Jesus, it was just a few words. It was just a couple sentences. So that kind of gave me some hope that they didn't really press that one too much. But I'm here to talk to you about some things Jesus did and said that shows he's real. So if we look in John, and at the very last chapter of the book of John, John chapter 21, John is telling us some things that as he's wrapping up this book, this is right when Jesus has died. He is, you know, he's left the disciples, left the apostles, left us all. But John says in verse 24 of chapter 21, it says, "This is the disciple which wrote which testified of these things and wrote these things. And we know that his testimony is true. And there are also many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. Amen. So I just wanted to start us off with the fact that Jesus, as he was here, if you wrote down everything that he did, it just wouldn't, you just couldn't contain it. It just would not be enough. So what I have done is I've chosen just a few of the miracles that are documented, and I've chose specific ones for specific reasons. Because as I looked through the miracles, I saw something that, I won't say it's a theme, it just kind of struck me. A lot of the miracles that Jesus performed were things that fixed things that we don't like. If you think about it, does anybody like to be paralyzed or sick? Any of us like to be sick? But in a lot of Jesus' miracles, he fixed that. And I know there are some people that relish in being sick and enjoy telling you how good they don't, how bad they feel. And, you know, I for one don't like being sick. I don't even like being told I'm about to be sick. I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow with my beloved physician. And I think the last time we met, it was in March. And he was kind of growling at me. He said, well, you know, you got the big muscles and you got this and that going on, but you're still diabetic and you still need to do this. And at the time he said it, I was kind of like, oh. But a couple of days later, I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, that makes me mad. He was getting in my face. So none of us like to be sick. None of us like to go to the doctor. Most of us don't like to be possessed with a demon or so, do we? Did that. I know a few people that like storms, like to listen for the tornado drills and all that. I think most of us do not like that, especially in the last couple of weeks. We've seen a lot of storms. Puerto Rico got hit. The Bahamas was hit. Texas, Florida. So none of us really like storms. But guess what? Jesus did something about some storms. And maybe this is why I'm seeing the doctor tomorrow, but I don't like to be hungry. And maybe that's part of my issue. I eat the wrong things in the improper quantities. But Jesus dealt with that. And one thing I know certainly none of us like to be is dead. And Jesus even addressed that. So we're just going to look through some of the miracles that Jesus performed, remembering that in John chapter 21, he states that if you had written everything that Jesus had done, you couldn't contain it all. So we're just kind of scratching the surface. So let's look in Matthew chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8. So in this episode, or this account, Jesus heals somebody with a certain sickness. And we'll read Matthew chapter 8, and we'll go through about verse 1 through 4. It says, when he was come down from a mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, canst thou make me clean? So what's the significance of being a leper? Back then, if you were a leper, where did you live? In a leper colony. You were not allowed to associate with anybody because it was so contagious. But somehow this gentleman, and we see, he came down from a mountain. He didn't come from a city. He didn't come from a highly populated area. He probably came from an isolated place, maybe him and some other lepers. And he says, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, canst thou make me clean? And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said unto him, See thou, tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift of Moses, offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. So, Jesus healed this man's leprosy. So how would any of us feel as far as having leprosy? I have some cousins. I think this runs in my family. Eczema is a big thing in our family. And even eczema, you scratch, your skin gets dry, you scratch so much, especially for the toddlers when they have it, they'll scratch and scratch. And what happens? Starts to have a sore. It's just they scratch the skin, it's kind of raw. So, I mean, that's just a mild form of a skin sickness, a skin disease. So Jesus took care of that gentleman's leprosy. So sickness, he takes care of that. Let's look in Luke chapter 7. Luke chapter 7. So just to quickly go back on the leprosy, so it's not only a skin disease, it's not only that situation, it's that stigma. So when he cured this man's leprosy, not only did his leprosy go away, but his need, his necessity to be away from people, that went away. So he could assimilate himself back into society. So Jesus fixed a couple of things in that situation. Let's look in Luke chapter 7 at the centurion's servant. Luke chapter 7, we'll begin at verse 1 and go through about verse 10. It says, now when he had end of his sayings in the audience of people, he entered into Capernaum. And a certain centurion's servant who was dear unto him was sick and ready to die. And when he heard of Jesus, he sent unto him the elders of the Jews, beseeching him that he would come and heal his servant. So to me, this is interesting. The centurion had a servant who had a son. So this is not even a direct relationship to the centurion, but he felt so close to his servant that he wanted Jesus to help his son. And when they came to Jesus, they besought him instantly, saying that he was worthy for whom he should do this. For he loveth our nation and hath built us a synagogue. And Jesus went with them, and when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying unto him, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldest enter under my roof. So that, to me, is a significant thing that the centurion says, I'm not even worthy for you to come into my house. Just help the situation. Verse 7, wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but I say in a word, and my servant shall be healed. So he didn't even want to approach Jesus. He just says, give the word that my servants would be healed. He says, for I'm a man also under authority, having under me soldiers, and I say unto one, go, and he go, another, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. And when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him and said, and turned about and said unto him, the people that follow him, I say unto you, I have not found so great a faith, no, not in Israel. And they that were sent returned to the house and found the servant whole that had been sick. So I guess I got that mixed up. It wasn't the servant's son. It was the actual servant. So the servant was healed. And it wasn't even through the servant's faith. It was through the centurion's trust and confidence in Jesus. So again, Jesus took away a sickness. And this was a sickness even unto death. So Jesus has that power. Let's look in Matthew chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8. And we'll begin in verse 23. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 23. And this is talking about Jesus being in a ship. It says, and when he was entered into a ship, his disciples followed him. And behold, there was a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. So to me, this even indicates a little bit about Jesus. I think he was physically tired as he was asleep. But it also indicates that he had no worries, because as he was asleep, what was everybody else doing? They were up and wondering what's going on. And his disciples came unto him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. And he said unto them, why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. But the men marveled, saying, what manner of man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him? So he has control over Mother Nature. He can change Mother Nature. That's power. So I know I've not been one for flying. I think it's okay. Get a little nervous. But one thing I really don't like is flying water. Because if the plane goes down over land, and if I survive, at least I can get up and walk, right? But if we crash into some water, I got to start swimming. I'm not much of a swimmer. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Maybe I need more faith. But Jesus has control over all these things. And I think that's something that I need to think about more, is even as I go about my daily activities, Jesus is in control. I know I get frustrated with some of my Facebook friends, maybe some of my Facebook associates, and every time there's something about a president, and I'm saying any president, and it's been going on for a long time, people have to post and get angry and have negative things to say. And I have to realize, I think all of us should realize, that God is in control. God is not going to let us, those of us that are in the faith, those of us that are faithful, he's not going to let us perish to the point where we die and that's it. We have something to look for in the future. So that always gives me hope. And I do, and if I were brave enough, I would probably post this, but I don't think I'm that brave. But all the president, the current president, crazy, I would like to say, you know what? The guy in Russia's crazy. The guy in South Korea is kind of nutty to me, or North Korea. Maybe we need to match crazy with crazy. I don't know. Just my thought. Okay, let's go ahead. We continue on in Luke chapter 8. So we've discussed him helping people with physical ailments. We've discussed him having control over the sea. And look what else Jesus has control over in Luke chapter 8. And we'll begin in verse 26. Luke 8, beginning at verse 26, says, they arrived at the country of the Gadarenes, which is over against Galilee. And he went forth to land, and there met him out of the city a certain man which had devils a long time, and wear no clothes, neither abode in any house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him with a loud voice and said, what have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God Most High? I beseech thee, torment me not. For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for oftentimes it caught him, and he was kept bound with chains and fetters, and he brake the bands and was driven out of the devil into the wilderness. So to me, the interesting thing is the devil, this devil that's possessing this man, has done what? In this real short description, he's recognized Jesus, and he calls him, what did he call him? Son of God, Most High. Something that most people on earth today won't do. But this demon recognized it and called him what he was, what he is. Verse 30, and Jesus asked him, saying, what is thy name? And he said, Legion, because many devils were entered into him. And they besought him that he would command them not to go up out into the deep. And there was a herd of many swine feeding on the mountain. And they besought him that he would suffer them to enter into them. And he suffered them. Then went the devils out of the man and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down the steep place into the lake and were choked. And when they that fed them saw what was done, they fled and went and told it into the city and the country. Then they went out to see what was done and came to Jesus and found the man out of whom the devils were departed, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. So this is not something that they knew this guy. They knew that he had these things. They bound him up. He broke chains. They heard about something going on with the I'm sure it was kind of that, hey, there's something going on with the crazy dude. Something happened. The pigs are dead. So I'm sure as people came back and were kind of stuttering and telling the story, people said, well, let's go see what happened. So they get there. The pigs are all dead. This guy's got on clothes and sitting with Jesus. What is going on? But what do we see? What are we seeing? Those of us that can read this whole story, Jesus has control over the legion. He has control over those demons and got this man back to where he was in a good state of mind. In verse 36, they also which saw it told them by what means he was possessed of the devils and healed. Then the whole multitude of the country of the Gadarenes round about besought him to depart from them, for they were taken with fear, with great fear. And he went up into the ship and returned back again. Now the man out of whom the devils were departed besought him that he might be with him. But Jesus sent him away, saying, return to thine own house and show how great things God hath done unto thee. And he went his way and published throughout the whole city how great things Jesus had done unto him. So when I read this one, Jesus is taking this man, has gotten the devils out. He's back to himself. He's wearing clothes. We don't have to chain him up. He's sitting there talking with Jesus. He asked Jesus, can I go with you? No, go back to your house. Just continue as you were. And what do the people want? We need you out of here, Jesus. This is kind of too much. So when I read that, that means in my mind, it doesn't surprise me when I read this list of people that didn't exist, that Jesus wouldn't be on that. Because they didn't accept at that point what was going on, what Jesus did, even when they saw it and saw evidence of it. Why would they accept it? Why would people be good with it 2,000 years later? So not that I'm saying it's right and justified. I can just, if they weren't digging it then, they won't be digging it now. So we've covered a couple of things now. He's helped people with sickness. He's calmed the sea. He's mastered nature. He's taken out demons. We're going to look at a couple more sick issues. Let's look at the next one in Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9. So has anybody seen miracles in this room? I saw a television special. This guy was supposed to be doing miracles. And most of the time when you see them doing miracles, what kind of miracles are they performing? What kind of sicknesses are they healing? Somebody got cancer, you can't see it. Somebody's got some migraine. Well, they said they had a migraine, you can't see it. Have they ever returned a guy's hand? Have they, if a guy's born with one hand, the arm is stunted, have they done that? They never do. I saw this one guy, he was doing something with people's shirts off and was messing around. You could see some blood, and he was bringing out some stuff, this nasty stuff. But you know what the thing was? There were a whole bunch of chickens that were running around. They think that he was getting chicken parts and kind of holding it in his hand, and when he was messing around, he was, oh, there you go, got that out of you. I mean, it's all fake. You mean, you've never seen any of these things that we read about with Jesus happen to people today. So Matthew chapter 9, let's look at verse 20. It says, "And behold, a woman which was diseased with an issue of blood 12 years came behind him and touched the hem of his garment. For she said within herself, if I might but touch his garment, I should be whole. But Jesus turned about, and when he saw her, he said, Daughter, be thou of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. And the woman was made whole that hour. And when Jesus was come to the ruler's house, he saw the minstrels and the people making noise. And he said unto him, Give place, the maid is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when the people were put forth, he went in and took her by the hand, and the maid arose. And the fame hereof went abroad into all that land." So he's helping people. He's fixing their physical ailments. Let's look in Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14. So this is something that many of us face. I don't know that I face this daily. Yeah, I guess I will face this daily. I get hungry. And especially if I'm bored and there's a vending machine with the nice pretty glass and I have some quarters in my pocket. And all I have to do is throw a few coins and it falls down. And just a couple of months ago, I was at work, I guess I was bored, went to the vending machine, and I'm just looking in that machine, I'm thinking, man, this is going to be so good. Put my quarters in there, press the button, the thing moved, and the chips went. Are you serious? They're stuck. So I'm trying to be cool and just rock the machine a little bit, and I think people said, uh-oh, somebody's trying to get the machine going, and then another guy came over, Sam. Sam's about as big as I am. Come on, now let me show you how to do it. Chips fell. Thanks, Sam. I want them to blame you and not me. But don't we all get hungry? Don't we all get to where we need something? Your stomach starts growling. And we think that that's just the dire straits for us. But think about those people that have not had anything to eat significantly for days and maybe sometimes months. You see them on television and they're frail, you can see the ribs, and that's true hunger. So I don't know that we've ever really suffered with true hunger. And I don't know that these people here were suffering with true hunger. But Jesus saw an opportunity to feed them. So we look in chapter 14 of Matthew. Let's start at verse 15. It says, "When it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, This is a desert place, and the time is now past. Send the multitude away that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals." They can go into the villages and buy food. So that tells me food was close. They might have had to make an effort to get to the food, but they weren't in dire straits. But in verse 16 it says, "But Jesus said unto them, They need not depart. Give ye them to eat. And they said unto him, we have but 5 loaves and 2 fish. So when he tells them, give them to eat, what do you think the reaction of the apostles was? I mean, we don't, this is a lunch for one kid. How are you, what? Verse, but it goes on, and he said, bring them hither to me. So bring the little bit of food you have, bring it to me. Verse 19, and he commanded the multitude to sit on the grass and took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed it and brake it and gave the loaves to his disciples and his disciples to the multitude. And they all did eat and were filled, and they took up the fragments that were remained, 12 baskets full. And when they had eaten, were about 5,000 men besides women and children. So Jesus was in tune with even people's hunger, even if it wasn't a dire strait. He was in tune with that. To me, that shows that he's in tune with all the things that we go through today. He knows that we get hungry. He knows that we get sick. He knows we get concerned about storms. He knows there's things about the devil. Not that the devil possesses us, but we are in a conflict. We're in a warfare with the devil right now. Jesus knows that. And I think a lot of these things that he did was just right, that he's in tune. He knows that. He wanted to show them his power. So I'm hoping that you get my point, that Jesus, when he was on earth, did things that made sense, that, I mean, just weren't things. I mean, what kind of miracles would a guy do today? You've heard a lot of stories. We've heard stories with fairy tales with guys that can weave straw and make it gold. Was that Rumpelstiltskin? We've all heard that. If we had some power, a lot of people say, if I had the power, I'd just make more money. Or I'd make myself rich, or I'd make myself more land, or I'd make my house gold. Or, you know, that's the thing that we would do. But Jesus didn't do any of those types of things. He fixed people's real-life problems to show that he was in charge and he had the power. If we continue on in this same chapter, verse 22, it says, and straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and go before him into the other side when he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into the mountain apart to pray. And the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, it is a spirit, and they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spoke unto them, saying, be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And Peter said unto him, Lord, if it be thou, bid me to come unto thee on the water. And he said, come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid and began to sink. He cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? And when they were coming to the ship, the wind ceased, and they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, of a truth, thou art the Son of God. So to me, I think Jesus did that intentionally, walked on that water intentionally, because what were his other options? He could have just appeared on the boat, right? Just appeared. But he made that trek across the water. They saw that, which compelled Peter to go out. And again, I think that was a test for Peter. So these things that Jesus is doing is not just for a show, it's not, you know, just to be doing something, but he had a purpose in each of these to show his power, to show that he can relate. I mean, he's not fixing things with who is he fixing? He didn't go to the kings and the magistrates and fix all their issues. He fixed common people that he met as he traveled. So that's, to me, the great thing about what Jesus has done and continues to do. So finally, let's look in the book of Mark, Mark chapter 16. Mark chapter 16. So we talked a little bit in our Bible study this morning about the fact that Jesus had done all these miracles. Even as miracles were being performed, people doubted. People got mad when he killed, the demons left. They went into the swine. Well, you killed all the pigs. You're hurting that. Just get out of here. You know, when he healed the sick man, I think he had the wilted hand. Well, you're healing on the Sabbath. You're working on the Sabbath. You're breaking the law. So he had done all those things. People still didn't believe. And as we mentioned this morning in class, as he was on the cross, they said, let's do this one last thing, which was save yourself and we'll believe. But he didn't do that. But he did show himself and was present with numerous people, up to 500 people at a time. And to me, that is probably the best of all these, because, you know, he overcame death. He himself was able to, as we talked about this morning as well, overcome that biggest thing that all of us have to face and all of us are probably should be concerned about, and that's our death. In chapter 16, it's interesting when we read this, all these things that we've talked about are complete. Jesus has been crucified, he's been buried, and now he's resurrecting. Verse 1, and when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome had sweet spices that they might come and anoint him. And very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came into the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said unto themselves, who shall roll away the stone from the door of the sepulchre? And when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. So it was a big, heavy stone. And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in white, in a long white raiment, and they were affrighted. And he said unto them, be not affrighted. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified, he is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But go your way, tell his disciples and Peter that he goeth before you into Galilee. There ye shall see him, as he said unto you. And they went out quickly and fled from the sepulchre, for they trembled and were amazed. Neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. Now when Jesus was risen early the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he cast seven devils. And she went and told them that had been with him, as they mourned and wept. And they, when they heard that he was alive had been seen of her, believed not. So even those that were following him, when they said, Jesus is alive, they said, it can't be. We saw him crucified. We saw his body expire. We saw that. Verse 12, and after he appeared to them in another form unto two of them as they walked and went into the country, and they went and told it unto the residue, neither believed they them. And afterward he appeared unto the leaven as he sat at meat and upbraided them with their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they believed not them which had seen him after he was risen. And I believe if you look at another version of this, he's walking, two men are walking into the city and they're talking about all the things that have been going on. And Jesus walked behind them. What's going on? What happened? What are you? You've been out of town? There's a big ruckus. There's a guy that was killed, and he thinks they're saying he's raised up and all this. They didn't recognize Jesus. To me, that was the greatest of all, because he defeated death. In verse 15, and he said unto them, go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but he that believeth not shall be damned. And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name shall they cast out devils, they shall speak with new tongues, they shall take up serpents, if they drink any deadly thing it shall not hurt them, they shall lay hands on the sick, they shall recover. So after the Lord had spoken to them, he was received unto heaven and sat on the right hand of God. And they went forth and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the word with signs following. Amen. So I hope that this has been a good lesson for you, something to think about, that as you read and as our younger people get older and you'll see and read things and listen. I mean, you have to put up with these people that don't believe and try to convince you that you're silly, you're stupid, you don't know what you're talking about, that all these things in the Bible aren't true, that none of it is real. But it's real. Those things happened. I was surprised, and I think maybe when I got to that article and it talked about Jesus not being real, I think there's just so much of evidence that preponderance of evidence is there. I don't think they wanted to start that fight, because as we've talked in other lessons, I mean, there is all these scrolls, these writings, and these things are verified. And we talked about Homer being one of those that's not real. I think some of the works he's had just have just some of the manuscripts, just there's a few. But if you look at what verifies him and what verifies Christ, I mean, it's just a multitude times more evidence about Christ being alive and doing these things than even Homer or Shakespeare or all these other earthly people. So if there are those that are subject to the invitation, remember that Christ Jesus, with all of our ailments, our sicknesses, our fears, our concerns, our thoughts about death, you know, he's in tune with all those things. And all he wants from us, all he needs from us, is for us to believe, to hear his word, to believe it, to repent, to confess that we believe that these things are true, and to finally be baptized. And I know a lot of times we talk a lot about baptism, and, you know, I have a lot of friends that are not members of the church, and I've even had a friend of mine tell a joke about people being in heaven, and, you know, all the Baptists were doing their thing, and Catholics are doing their thing, and they had to sneak by the Church of Christ group because they're the only ones that think they're there. They're the ones that think they're in heaven. But I don't think that's what we're trying to say. It's not the Church of Christ just because we have whatever on the side of, on the sign out there, but it's because each one of us have to have that relationship with Christ individually, and that's what saves us, not the fact that we come to this particular building or any of that. It's because we believe, we've made that our own personal, and I don't want to sound in a denominational way, but it takes us each personally to do what's commanded of us, and that's what gets us to heaven. So if there are those that are subject to the invitation and need to be baptized, you can do so as we together stand and sing page 853. Sing no one.